Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Simon Pirani, who's Senior Research Fellow at the OIES, to discuss his recent paper, Central Asian Gas Prospects for the 2020s, that was published by the OIES at the back end of last year. And this builds upon his December 2012 paper, Central Asian and Caspian Gas Production and the Constraints on Exports. Just so people know, we're recording this podcast on the 20th of May, so that is kind of where we are in the timeline. Simon, great to have you here. You're in South London. I'm about 10 miles south of you, and we're recording this over the internet. So why don't we start with a quite basic question, if we can. What is Central Asian gas, and how important is that gas to Europe and other key markets?
Good afternoon, David. Central Asian gas is produced by three of the Central Asian countries: Turkmenistan, which is the largest producer, Uzbekistan, not far behind. So Turkmenistan producing about 60 BCM a year in recent years, Uzbekistan a little behind that, and Kazakhstan is the third producer, where the gas is essentially associated with oil. The market to which this gas is really important in terms of exports now is China. 10 years ago, it was Russia, and it's really that switch from exports to Russia to exports to China. That's the big change we've seen in recent years. So 2018, 47 BCM to China, 16 BCM to Russia. And the big question for the next decade will be whether the pipeline corridor to China, the Central Asia-China corridor, which currently has three strings, total 55 BCM a year capacity, whether that can be expanded with a fourth string, bringing it up to 85 BCM.
Now, it's interesting, you know, because your paper, we're going to talk in a minute about Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, and indeed Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. But before we carry on, could you just kind of perhaps summarise some of the statistics on these countries, you know, to give us a feel for how different they are?
Yes. Turkmenistan, as I mentioned, 60-odd BCM a year, the largest gas producer, but a very small population. This is a country with 5 million people, so it's historically had a lot of gas for export. It's a small country with a very top-down political system, and that system has proved inflexible in terms of negotiating with partners. And the switch from Russia to China is really its big success of recent years. Uzbekistan also produces almost as much gas as Turkmenistan, but has a large population, the largest in Central Asia. And most of that gas is consumed domestically. It's consumed relatively inefficiently, so the urban heating and electricity systems and industry has carried on the sort of Soviet model of being of using cheap gas effectively as a subsidy to the economy. A significant presence in Uzbekistan is Lukoil, the Russian oil company, which now produces nearly a third of the gas in Uzbekistan, and is one of the forces that's pushing for change. Kazakhstan, a smaller population than Uzbekistan, an absolutely huge geographical area. People like to superimpose a map of Kazakhstan on one of Western Europe. It's about the same size.
Wow, that's big, isn't it?
And most of the gas is associated with oil. Of course, Kazakhstan is a major oil producer. The future of gas production there is really largely going to be decided by upstream engineers talking about to what extent that gas is going to be needed for reinjection into the reservoirs for oil production.
So these three countries are fundamentally different, which is one of the reasons I found your paper absolutely fascinating, because it's an area we know the names, but we don't really know the details of the countries. But talking about Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, are the issues and drivers the same across all three major gas-supplying countries?
No. So In the case of Turkmenistan, it's really a very, very export-dependent and small economy. Talking about Uzbekistan, you've got that element of the population and the domestic market. And in Kazakhstan, it's very much a story of gas and oil and coal, because gas is now being, certainly according to government policy, is going to be used to substitute for coal in the domestic power market.
Now,
then you've got Tajikistan, and Kyrgyzstan, who come into the picture really as, in Kyrgyzstan's case, as a gas consumer. Mm-hmm. If the fourth pipeline is built to China, it'll go through Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. And in Tajikistan, which is whose energy economy is mostly hydro, gas could come into the picture if that pipeline's built.
Look, right at the beginning of this podcast, you mentioned China and the role of China being an important factor for this region. You know, and your paper was written before the COVID-19 crisis and with a resultant impact on gas demand. Now, of course, there must have been reductions in Chinese purchases of Central Asian gas in the last few months. So to what extent has that impacted the Central Asian producers?
So you're right, David, there has been an impact. We only know as much about it as the information flow that reaches us, which is always limited by various factors in Central Asia. What we know is in March, the Kazakhs stated that there'd been a cut in purchases by China of about 20-25%, and PetroChina, which is the main purchaser, declared force majeure, obviously as a result of the COVID-19 crisis. The other thing we know is that this has continued, and that the three producers had a meeting last week, which was reported in the press, to discuss those cuts. And essentially, according to those reports, they're going to share out the pain proportionate to their volume of proportionate to what they contribute to those exports. Mm-hmm. I think the effect is really going to be felt most by Turkmenistan because of its heavy dependence on those export revenues. Mm-hmm. I do not agree with quite a few Western observers who've, every time Turkmenistan's export revenues fall because the price of gas has fallen, mm-hmm. Write articles about how the economy is on the edge of collapse. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, we've seen this year and actually this month in Turkmenistan things that we don't see very often. A lot of rationing in state shops, quite a bit of economic hardship, and really quite unprecedented in recent years, a very large demonstration which in a country where people don't really usually go out on demonstrations. This does not indicate that we're about to have a change of government, mm-hmm. but it indicates that Turkmenistan really is suffering economically in a way that it hasn't done perhaps for many years.
But of course, you know, you've been researching this region for some time, you know, and, you know, some of the things you just mentioned in the last few minutes is quite surprising considering the country concerned. But you know, how have these countries changed between 2012 when you did your first paper and the time of your last major research at the back end of 19? How have things changed?
I think that the real change is that switch towards China. Mm. Another change which is interesting, and I think we've yet to see the consequences of it, is that these countries have, in all three cases, become conscious that their major producers very, very far geographically from their markets, which is much more important in the case of gas than it is with oil. And they've looked at petrochemicals with quite a degree of success. Excuse me. So there's two big petrochemicals plants have started up in the last 5 years in Uzbekistan and two in Turkmenistan. The second of the Turkmen ones is a gas to liquids plant. And I think there are some real question marks about whether that's a vanity project or whether it's going to work. But certainly the other three plants are going to export to the Asian market. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot has been disrupted by coronavirus. That mainly means China. But I think this is a new departure for them and quite a big change.
Interesting. Well, look, what I'd like to suggest for the balance of the podcast is maybe we go through each of the countries in turn, maybe go deeper into some of the issues. So why don't we start with Turkmenistan as the Central Asian country with the largest gas reserves and the greatest export potential? So why don't we start by saying, you know, how much potential is there and why did the country shift all its gas exports from Russia to China?
I think the shift from Russia to China was really about the economics of gas consumption and gas and the gas market in Russia. Mm-hmm. It simply doesn't make sense for Russia to pay prices that are interesting to Turkmenistan for Turkmen gas, and it hasn't for many years because obviously Russia has plenty of its own gas. Mm-hmm. It used to do it perhaps as part of the geopolitical relationship left over from former times, and that stopped in 2016. They couldn't agree on prices. They had a big bust-up about prices actually in 2009,
right,
during the financial crisis, and 2016 was the end of it. Russia has signed a very small contract for imports this year and next, but that's almost a matter of sort of being polite to your former suppliers and keeping everybody happy and so on, rather than a big economic fact.
Yeah, yeah.
So production, I think, will stay steady. I think that the big change we've seen in terms of production is we've now got two foreign companies working upstream in Turkmenistan. This mm-hmm. would have been unheard of years ago, indeed, when I did the previous paper. We've got the CNPC, which is working under a production sharing agreement at Bagtiarlik, which is as close as you can get to the border to put gas into the pipe to China.
Yep.
Produced 13 BCM last year. And Petronas, working offshore, mm-hmm. block number one in the Turkmen sector of the Caspian, produced 4 BCM last year. Now, so those two companies together, they now account for a quarter of output.
Okay.
Now, if you talk to those Western oil men who were traveling to Turkmenistan, they'd be tearing their hair out, saying it was very difficult to get into the upstream and so on. Mm-hmm. But these are two Asian companies who've managed to negotiate with the Turkmen authorities in such a way as to develop that business. And CNPC has also worked at the big new field, Galkinish, which is a huge, one of the largest gas fields in the world, and the one that's been developed over recent years. And CNPC have effectively developed that field mm-hmm. In conjunction with the Turkmen companies.
It's interesting. Just kind of one of while you were answering that question, I was just thinking about another country, which of course is Iran. You know, wasn't Turkmenistan exporting to them as well? You know, and also what about Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan's potential markets?
Turkmenistan was exporting to Iran to areas of the north of Iran, which are much nearer actually to the Dawlatabad field, which was the main field prior to Galkinish,
mm-hmm.
Than they are to Iran's large gas production in the south. It was never the happiest of relationships. There were lots and lots of arguments about prices and quality of supply.
Yeah.
However, it's now a relationship in the past because Iran, as part of its strategy for developing its own domestic gas market and the infrastructure, has completed the pipeline that runs from the south right. to those areas in the northeast, and it doesn't need the Turkmen supply anymore.
Okay.
Turkmenistan does supply a very small quantity to Azerbaijan in the form of swaps through Iran, actually.
Okay.
They could supply more through that direction, but there are all kinds of political and economic things that stop them from doing so.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, in the past few years, supplied a little to southeast Kazakhstan. It's also easier to get gas from Turkmenistan mm-hmm. to there than it is from the west of Kazakhstan, where Kazakhstan's gas production is. These are quite small volumes, right. but obviously if you're a domestic customer in southeast Kazakhstan, you Absolutely. Want an assured supply in the winter.
Well, why do we go back just and talk for a minute about China? Because I was interested in one of your lines in your report. China has left little chance in ensuring the security of its gas supplies from Turkmenistan. So I wonder what you meant by that. And also, of course, you know, could Turkmenistan become too reliant on China as a gas buyer? As you say, that about 90% of the country's export revenues, you know, come from those gas exports. Is there an over-reliance going on here?
So to take the second part of your question first, yes, I think that any economist would tell you that Turkmenistan is uncomfortably reliant on those export revenues. Like so many other hydrocarbons producers, it has not been very good about diversifying its economy, and that remains a problem. Now, looking from the Chinese point of view, China has always been quite cautious about the gas that Turkmenistan has often quite in quite lavish terms promised to supply. And these matters came to a head in the winter of 2017 when we don't know exactly what the problem was. It was probably something to do with the transportation system and just the general sort of good ordering of things when we're at a time of peak gas demand all round. And at that time, Turkmenistan found itself unable to meet the nominations that had been made by China. And the Chinese companies were extremely annoyed about this and actually raised the matter publicly, which is not their style, and complained that these technical problems had led to shortfalls in January of all months, when you least want such shortfalls. And I think that was a reminder to us all, though, that, that China actually knows about these problems. It has a lot of people working on the field upstream. It's got its own PSA there near the border, so it's much more aware of what's going on in the country than perhaps the rest of us. And so it limits its export purchases to those that it really thinks Turkmenistan can supply.
Well, what I'd like to do, if I can, is move on to Uzbekistan, and then we can work our way through to Kazakhstan in a minute. You know, and you know, because you say that gas production levels are similar to Turkmenistan, but it's certainly a very different domestic market, a political structure. So I wonder whether you could explain that and tell us a bit more about how competition between the export and domestic markets for gas are managed. Is that managed by the market? How's that done?
It's not really managed by the market. No, it's kind of, you've got a situation which is,
I didn't think it was going to be somehow.
You've got a typical sort of former Soviet situation where the prices that Uzbekistan gets for its gas that it sells to China are a lot higher than the prices that are being charged to the local population. What's changed in Uzbekistan is that the previous president passed away in 2016, so we've got a new president, Shavkat Mirziyoyev, and he's something of a reformer and a sort of exciting event in the gas industry last year was that he went to Parliament and sort of banged on the table and said, why are we buying, why is Uzbek Neftegas, the main state-owned gas company, why is it buying from Lukoil at $146 a thousand cubic meters and selling that gas to the residential sector at $40 a thousand cubic meters? What on earth is going on? And the former Soviet model of using this cheap gas as a subsidy to the economy will not fade away overnight. But I think now we have a president demanding tighter accounting, demanding greater efficiencies, issued an important decree on the gas sector last year. So that's the direction we're going.
So gas sector reform, which you refer to in your paper, is starting, and is the market opening up, and is corruption, you know, a limiting factor?
I think of a lot of the things that are going on reform-wise as similar in some ways to the reforms of Russia in the 1990s. So we've got capital-intensive production at big state-owned enterprises, but these enterprises are being organized as joint stock companies, so they're being separated out so that the government and the president, indeed, can see what's going on inside them. He's demanding figures on his desk. We actually had a figure officially published by the statistics agency for total gas output in Uzbekistan for the first time in 2019. Wow. So when we're talking about progress, this is the sort of progress we're talking about. We have foreign exchange liberalization, we have tax reform. They are now talking to the international agencies in a way I think they didn't do before. But we're at the beginning of a long process. And I would say that this is a government that doesn't want to change everything. We're not talking about shock therapy that we had in Russia in the 1990s. We're talking about the bit-by-bit reforms that go gradually in the gas industry and elsewhere. I think we will see more foreign companies working in the gas sector. And as I think I said to you before, the big success story there has been Lukoil. 18 BCM of output last year, and big petrochemicals plant, exports to China, and a bit of an argument, as you've heard, about gas that's sold back to Uzbek Neftegaz and the price at which it's sold.
Yeah. Well, look, why don't we just, before we kind of conclude on this podcast, why don't we just briefly talk about Kazakhstan? Because, as you said in the introductory remarks, it's a different hydrocarbon country. And I believe that the, as you said in your paper, oil is being used for reinjection to maximise oil production. So what is the story in Kazakhstan?
So the difference between what Kazakhstan produces and what it exports is not only narrow, but it's tightening. And what we'll see over the next 10 years, I think, is domestic consumption will rise, and that's an important part of the government's energy strategy, but gas production actually will not rise substantially, or rather gross gas production from these three big oil producing projects will go up a lot, but most of that gas will be reinjected. So if our listeners can stand a couple more figures.
Yeah, please do.
The government's sort of baseline scenario is that gross gas production in 2030 will be around what it is now, which is 60 BCM. And of that, 39 BCM will be reinjected, which is a little more than is reinjected now.
Yeah.
In 2040, gross gas production, because the oil production by that time, according to government scenario, will be enormous.
Yeah.
Gross gas production will be 88 BCM, 52 of which will be reinjected. That's right out at 2040,
yeah,
leaving sales gas 15 BCM higher than it is now.
Yeah.
But before we get there, so for the rest of this decade and in 2030, so 2030, for example, what I worked out using those government figures is that the net available for export based on the government's projections will go down from 2.6 BCM in 2025 to 0.9 BCM in 2030.
So nothing.
Kazakhstan's importing 6, 7 BCM from Russia for the western regions where it can most easily take gas from the network there. But you're not talking about a lot of exports.
And is its approach to the same, similar as other countries, with international companies, or you know, where's the investment coming from?
Well, of course, the international companies have been working in Kazakhstan for many years.
Yes.
The big IOCs on the oil fields. So there's quite a different relationship there. The problem is, I think, as far out as you and I can see, David, the gas is always going to play very much second fiddle to oil in Kazakhstan.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
The
increase in domestic consumption is about reducing reliance on coal in the power sector. And to that end, there's been quite an upgrading of the domestic transportation infrastructure, because again, of course, getting gas from one part of that huge country to the other is a big issue. And that transportation infrastructure has developed. It's a big development there was the completion of the pipeline from the west to the east in 2016. It was commissioned.
Well, look, just to kind of close the loop on the last two countries which we briefly spoke about, that's Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan. Just in literally in a minute, can you just give us a kind of quick picture on that as to how likely they are to become regional gas producers and exporters?
So not likely to become producers, although there's surely a little gas there. Kyrgyzstan, Gazprom of Russia, has bought the national gas company there and is investing because actually it sees it as a potential market for gas that could be produced in southern Russia and Kazakhstan and now piped over there. Tajikistan, a tiny amount of gas used at present, not much of a pipeline system, and that will change if we get the Line D of the corridor going through to China, which would which would go through Tajikistan, a very mountainous country, if indeed it's built. I'd expect that to be delayed as well, David, with coronavirus and all the consequences. But it may happen eventually. That depends on the Chinese market.
Well, that's great. Well, look, just I always like to end up with a kind of general question, if I may, Simon, and ask you to kind of put on your thinking cap, because over the last 20 minutes or so, we've discussed a lot of issues. And I really expect the ultimate question is, what's going to happen? Where are we going to go? So how will gas exports and gas consumption change across the three countries? And really, can China rely on gas from the Caspian to underpin its economic growth and revival from the COVID-19 crisis? What do you think?
I think gas production and exports can increase. I think they'll be towards China. I think it's worth saying to the listeners in Europe that we remain at the Institute of the opinion that Turkmen gas will not in the foreseeable future cross the Caspian Sea by any kind of trans-Caspian pipeline and feed the southern export corridor to Europe. That's not something we foresee. We've written a lot about that. Mm-hmm. But yes, exports to China, they will grow just as the Chinese economy will continue to grow. And that's a picture that we'll continue to follow.
Well, look, Simon, as always, I always find it fascinating talking to you and learning about countries which are I know of name and know very little about, to be honest with you. So thank you very much for your time. And I really enjoyed our conversation. It certainly builds upon your paper, Central Asian Gas Prospects for the 2020s, that can be found at our website, www.oxidenergy.org, where you can also find all our podcasts in the multimedia folder and other papers published by the Institute. I really hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you, keep safe, and goodbye to everyone.